Yeah. Five killers arise from graves that within. They shed the dead weight of morals and sins set loose by Zeus. They clear space and time and lead the murderous horde known as Experience Grind.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Experience Grind Podcast, the show about getting older and the experiences we've gained along the way. I'm Ryan, and this week I've got hosting duties. But I couldn't do it without my own weird collection of best men. So let me introduce them. First up, it's Dave.
What's up, bro, bitch?
Nothing much. Angie. Next up, we've got Brian.
I've been a groomsman in 5 weddings, a best man in 1, and my best man is likely going to be a woman.
A lot of weddings.
Yeah.
That's so many weddings. How do you have so many friends? What's it like?
Stressful.
Next up, Sean.
I have friends.
I definitely have friends.
It's very convincing.
Counted on his finally fingers. I need to point that out there. Is that he used a visual joke to make that joke.
Yeah.
It would be done no other way on Experience Grind. Last and not least, we have Kyle.
I attempted to Google it, and as far as I can tell, this term has never been used, so I am dubbing and coining the term Bromcom.
I already have it written down. I love it.
Written down, and it is a thing. It's absolutely a thing.
I Googled, and it just kept showing me energy companies in India.
Bromcom give you energy companies?
It was weird, but
that means it is a thing in India already. Yeah. It's established.
Well, just Brom was the thing. Bromcom, no hits.
Did you try Googling bromantic comedy?
I did not also do that. A thing. That might have taken it. Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, as everybody's already hinted, we are talking about a bromance this week. I wanted to do something light and breezy, so we're revisiting 2009's I Love You Man, starring Paul Rudd, Jason Segel, and Rashida Jones. I Love You Man was shot with a $40 million budget, grossed $92.3 million worldwide, and on Rotten Tomatoes, it received an 82% from critics and a 74% from audiences. If you looked at the averages, it's a 3.4 out of 5 from critics and a 3.7 out of 5 from audiences. So
it's not a bad spot.
More critics liked it, but they liked it slightly less, but it's still like around the 7 mark. So pretty average all around.
Because critics probably are sitting there saying, like, I related too hard to this movie because I'm sitting here in a movie theater all the time and I don't have friends and it hit me in the fields. Maybe that's why.
All they had to do was just look around. The friends are the ones along the way, right?
They were critics talk to each other? People.
I don't think they do. And that's the issue.
That might be the issue.
I don't know. I think we need to have more critics talking to each other with a live mic in front of them
during the
I
movie. Want to be in the
movie. During the movie,
I'm pretty sure that's what they call Mystery Science Theater 3000. Those robots are very critical of what they're watching,
which is actually a very fantastic show that I need to get back into watching.
All the episodes are free on YouTube.
Is it a movie? Is it a show of a movie?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You can also just do like the riff tracks of it too, which is pretty neat.
Riff tracks are fantastic, and sometimes our theater next to my work shows the live experiences.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's fun.
That's pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice. And all right, well, we are going to give our quick thoughts on I Love You Man before we break it down further with our rating system. But before we do that, I'm going to read the movie summary. I Love You Man is the story of Peter Klavan, a groom-to-be who realizes he has no close male friends to be his best man. With a ticking clock, Peter embarks on a quest for bromance that leads him to befriending Sidney Fife. Laid back and straightforward, everything that Peter, awkward and unconfident, is not. Peter and Sidney's blossoming best friendship starts straining his previously rock-solid relationship with his fiancée, Zoe. Will Peter be able to successfully balance his friendship with Sidney without sidelining Zoe? Stakes. That's it. Let's hop into our spoiler-free thoughts real quick. I'm going to hop it to everybody here. let's talk about your thoughts on I Love You Man and your experience with it. Dave, your hand's up first. Let's go your way.
I haven't seen this thing since I saw it in the theaters in 2009. And I didn't realize how much I quote this movie still. Like, it just embedded in my brain. Like, I yell out, "This is my nightmare," at my children often.
All the time. Likewise, I forgot that this movie was the movie that christened the saying "totes my goats."
Yup. That one hit me real hard, too. When that popped up, I'm like, man, that had to have... Is that why I started saying this? We were talking off the air prior to this, and I don't think most of us have seen this since, like, it came out. And I finished this and immediately went and watched Role Models, and just, like, the back-to-back of those, they're only a year apart. Role Models was a year prior to this, and so much of the sayings that I say all the time come from these two movies.
I often yell out at people, "If you white, you Ben Affleck." I get it.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Strangers, though. That's how we relate to each other now.
The whispering eye. It means vagina.
I guess I can get any. Am I the only one that was really rooting for this Sydney and Peter thing to really, you know?
Well,
was Zoe really good enough for him?
Are you supposed to see this movie with your girlfriend or, like, your buddy? And
does it matter, though? Like, I remember going to a theater when 500 Days of Summer was out, and it was like one of those small indie theaters. And if there were 100 people in there, me and my buddy Evan went together for this one, and we were the only hetero life mates that were there. Mm-hmm. Everyone else was, like, definitely in a date situation. It was a great time still.
I feel like you probably had a better time than everybody else.
Probably. There were no stakes.
Yeah.
I can tell you, as somebody who saw this movie in theaters as the Sydney, with my good friend and his very, very long-term girlfriend, it was fine. So great. And we all got it. And we loved it. And it was
because you're in the Sydney spot for
you
that.
You understand the boundaries by that point. As you do. As you learn. And it's fine.
But that's what this movie's about, is understanding boundaries. And trying to... Yeah. Peter's an interesting character in this. And I related hard to him at points.
Oh, yeah.
Amen.
Yeah.
Especially in, like... mid to late 30s, and you're like, man, do I need more friends, and how do I do that? Brian, yes. You don't have to worry about this, Captain Wedding.
Dude, but, like, no, I do, though, because I live in a brand new city away from everybody I know, and I'm like, oh god, I'm almost 40. How do you make new friends?
But it's like, you when but I, it's you, you're like a tractor beam of niceness. People just go to you.
Brian, when I think about the people, and yells, "Does anyone want to record a podcast?"
Hey, are there any white guys around that think that their voice needs to be amplified for no good reason?
You'll get a line, probably.
No, but, like, when I think about the people I know in this general area, like, one of my best friends is, I'm saying this very, what's the word?
Facetiously. Hyperbolic.
Metaphorical. That's actually the word. Thank you. There I appreciate you
that. I'm just going to say words.
As hyperbolic as possible. Out. One of my best friends in this area is my girlfriend's baby daddy.
That is such a weird dynamic.
Because I just don't know many other people.
I was going to say progressively.
We're not close at all. It's just like, I don't know anybody around here.
By default, he's one of your
exactly.
closest.
Exactly. Like, he's one of the people I talk to on a regular basis.
Oh, man.
I can understand that one, though, because, like, we're all in different places. Like, I got 3 kids, and that's so many fucking kids. And the people I hang out with also have kids. And, like, when I hang out with you guys, I end up talking about my kids a lot, like I'm doing right now. When I hang out with them, the people that have kids, it's the last thing we want to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
I can see that.
Well, it's fair. You did, in talking about your kids, say that this is your nightmare.
So they yell it in their faces.
I feel like that yeah. same thing would come up if kids did come up with your other friends. The kids, oh yeah, it's a living a nightmare.
But it's not. You guys didn't say anything. This was your chance.
I imagine that you're all sitting around and somebody mentions the kids and like, dude, come on, we're having a good time here.
It's like talking about work outside of work with yeah. other people.
That's the worst one. It's so hard not to, though.
It's like, why are we talking about work? We're off. Let's do something else.
What else are we yeah. supposed to talk about? What do normal people talk about? That's what I ask myself on the reg.
I'm pretty sure it's like politics, sports, and the weather, none of which I really care about or want to talk about. So, well, care about.
Sports is the weird one. I mean, it's the
Why
one
sports
I get
the weird one?
I didn't mean weird one. I meant the right one. Weather to me is the weird one. I could not give a fuck about the weather. And it feels like every dude I've ever known in a professional setting loves to talk about the weather.
How are you doing with the snow down there?
Man, I was genuinely curious.
For this, right? He tried to bait him, and I appreciate him not biting.
Yeah. I like that he didn't take the
Get
bait.
Get fucked, Brian.
I guess I should say I love this movie. I adore this movie. I have since it came out. It's endlessly quotable, and it's just it's feel good in a way that, like, you start off like, oh, this poor guy. By the end, you're like, ah, no, this is great. I love it.
Yeah,
awesome, Kyle. I know you have a journey with this one.
Well, I like Dave. I have not seen this since I saw it in theaters this time, but it's crazy how much similar. I don't play bass, but I'll walk everywhere. And I'm like slapping the bass. You know, you do it. It happens.
Do you do it all the way up there? Do you hold it that high?
I mean, because I like the Rage Against the Machine bass player. He gets up there. He's got it set very high for the action. But yeah, it's weird that this is not a David Wayne or a Judd Apatow movie with
100%
everybody
right.
that is in this movie and with the same vibes that it has. But it's also crazy, and I think why the first time I saw it, I always consider it sort of middling, is because with that type of people, and you do expect, I guess, more of a straight-up comedy, but this literally is a rom-com for dudes. Like, it has all the same pacing elements and everything of a rom-com. Like, even the fight, like, at the three-quarter mark to the weird just makeup show up at the airport.
Yeah.
Like, all of it is literally in there. And viewing it that way this time, it changed the experience. I had a blast watching it. It is just such a feel-good, like, throughout. It's you just enjoy it, even though it's not a comedy. It's still a well-done movie. I mean, Paul Rudd's fantastic. Come on.
And he's such a likable character.
I did send a funny message to Ryan. I said, so you're Paul Rudd in this, and I'm Jason Segel, right? And he just went 100.
Absolutely.
Sean. I absolutely had a great time with this. I couldn't take my eyes off the screen. Just everything that was happening was just so engaging. You kind of know everything that's coming up, but it's also like seeing it in the lens of it being like a bromance kind of thing, where he's in a normal relationship, but it's like off to the side, he's got this going on. It was just different enough that it hit all the right beats. And every time Doug shows up in this movie,
it's so good.
Like, oh, he's New City goofing. Love it.
Love Thomas Lennon.
I do too.
Very nice. So this, for everybody, was a rewatch. Yeah, this is not new for anyone. All right, cool. Well, with that, we're going to hop into it, and we're going to get into some more specifics, and we're going to break this down ranking style, as we've been in the past, maybe the last time for a bit. We'll see how next week's goes. That'll be up to Kyle. But starting off, we're going to start with casting. So anybody who wants to hop in first, who thinks they have a thought on casting, good, bad, could be better, Kyle?
I mean, we kind of discussed this off air a bit too. This is just the who's who of comedy in like the mid-2000s. Everybody who is anybody is in this movie. So I'll just quickly knock. I think fuck it, it gives it a 10. Paul Rudd is also fantastic, as is Jason Segel. They are absolutely amazing in everything that they do in this. So yeah, 10. Fuck it.
To add on to that, all of the little bit pieces that are going on the side, like Andy Samberg and J.K. Simmons, was just so perfectly cast.
Andy Samberg's bit is so good in this.
I mean, Lou Ferrigno, just like his whole storyline from beginning to end, like the randomness of the ending with Lou Ferrigno. Man, I really can't dock this any points. This is a 10 for me in casting.
This Brian? Cast is so stacked. It is insane. There are like, even the bit parts are big actors. Like you have Aziz Ansari and Nick Kroll showing up as just background characters of a random friend group like he goes fencing with. Mm-hmm. It's, and there's like, you have Jon Favreau playing such a good asshole in this movie, and like his group of friends that he plays poker with, you have famous actors in that. It's, the cast is insane in this movie, and I also have to give it a 10.
I'm also going to give it a 10, and I think the Favreau casting was my favorite part of it, and it's because Robert Downey Jr. told him to take the role. Because Iron Man had just come out, and Downey pretty much said, don't just go pat yourself on the back. Keep working. Keep going. And he took it. I can't imagine anyone else being in that asshole role because he plays it so well.
So well.
We all know that guy.
We like, do know that
all,
guy.
Maybe not now, but we've all known that guy, and it was so bitch perfect.
I also love Jane Curtin in this movie.
She was great.
And then they kind of cut to J.K. Simmons. You're like, oh, it's them. Oh, this is so wonderful. I'd watch.
I'll watch any J.K. Simmons movie happily.
One of the nice things about having not seen this in like 16 years is I forgot everybody else who was in this outside of Paul Rudd and Jason Segel. Like I forgot that it was Rashida Jones. So every time it cut to a new scene and someone new was on the screen. Oh, sick.
When I saw the guy who plays Alan briefly in this movie, the straight guy who Andy Samberg picks up at the gym.
Yeah.
My first thought was, is that the guy who used to do HQ trivia?
I thought the same thing.
I loved Matt Walsh shows up as a cameo as one of his Upright Citizen Brigade bits.
So good, golfer. Man. It's so good.
Like, oh, yeah.
It just nails everything, dude. 10.
Yeah. I'm right there with everybody. Won't repeat anything here, but I will say Jamie Presley is also great. She gives back to asshole Jon Favreau perfectly. I love just everything about their dynamic is so fun. But yeah, this casting's great all around 10 for me.
I love how she gives it back, because when I was watching this, and it's hard not to think it now with Jason Segel, it's, I got Shrinking vibes about how honest all the characters are being in this movie, and then you see the friends who are also assholes to each other, but it also works for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like I get major Shrinking vibes from this.
Sarah sat there through that scene and she goes, huh, they're rather dysfunctional, aren't they?
they seem quite functional. It's working for them.
I would love to just give I can't give a bonus point here, but Murray Gershon's the old man, Mel.
Oh, Mel.
I had an old guy like Murray or like Mel, who honestly, sadly, just passed away. He went by Jinx or Jinxy. He would just bar hop at like 11 o'clock at night.
Jinxy's a great bar hopping name.
It was honestly very sad when he died. But Mel reminded me of Jinx. And what a great character.
I'm 85 years old. Beer. What the fuck plans would I have?
I love it. It just plays into this film's sweetness. It's all very great and just, very sweet.
I took that photo a couple years ago.
So, unless I'm incorrect, it seems like casting's a 10. Mm-hmm. So, with that, we'll hop to story and motivation. Anybody who has any strong thoughts that would like to leave up, Dave's up. Go ahead.
No, the story in this thing is damn near pitch perfect because it follows the rom-com formula to a T. We have an expectation because the genre is a rom-com. We know how this story is supposed to go. This is a feel-good movie. It's not going to try to subvert any expectations. I think that it all works. It all fits into place. The only part of this movie I can't stand is the wedding at the end because it takes way too long. This conversation they're having, it drove me nuts. Other than that, though, man, this all works. You know every beat that's going to happen. You don't need to be surprised. You're supposed to feel good.
Yeah. I think a lot of I can echo that, a lot of that, and I think a lot of that might go into the screenplay, but like the story and motivation, like this is such a relatable thing for a lot of people. I think it's a great story to tell and something that I don't think I've really seen anywhere else, like this story and the motivation for it going on. I think they nail it. It's unique. 10 for me.
Oh, I didn't give a score.
Dave, what was your score, Dave?
I'm going to go with an 8.
Okay. All right. Kyle?
I pretty much, Dave said everything I agree with and delivered it eloquently and also gave it the exact same score, I feel. So, mirror image, 8.
I am in agreement. I do think, I disagree about the wedding scene a little bit. I enjoy the wedding scene.
It takes so long!
The culmination of the movie. I think it takes longer to get into it than it does end. I felt like this time when I was watching it, it took forever to get to the point where it's like, okay, we set up so much. Now we finally get to the point where it's like, hey, this guy needs groomsmen. And then you go through the whole montage of meeting these guys. And we don't meet Sydney until like 45 minutes into the movie.
Which I love. But you've stood up there. You said you've been a groomsman 5 times, best man 1 time. Yeah. If this conversation's happening around you,
I'd lose my shit.
You're not going to see?
My shit. But in a comedy movie, I'm okay with it.
Rashida Jones in is real the most life, understanding bride.
Oh, well, she is a saint.
She is like have this full conversation in the middle of her wedding,
right?
She plays she's the like, coolest no, girlfriend slash fiance slash wife it's in everything she's
conversation.
In.
Conversation. They're just calling each other bro, chacho, bromo sapien.
Comes down to Larry Wilmore to break it up. I love it. Yeah, and I agree with Sean that the premise is something I hadn't seen before. Where it's like, oh yeah, we need a balanced bridal parties. What a crazy concept for a movie. I love it. I'm giving it a 9.
Okay. So I hope somebody's keeping track of these numbers because I'm not. Thank you so much, Brian. God, I love you. All right. I love you, man. I think I might be the most negative here, even though I love it. I think this is kind of an average story with a bent on it. And once you see that bent, it doesn't really deviate from the standard story beats of a romance. The bent is that it's a bromance. I like the beginning that they real quickly kind of get the proposal and all this stuff out of the way and all this.
Real quickly.
And it's very quick because that's not the meat and potatoes. The meat and potatoes is the Sydney relationship, which comes up, and then the boundaries. I think there's interesting stuff here. And I will give it more credit for that. But I do also think it's kind of just a little... I've seen other things play with this formula. If we bring up David Wayne, like They Came Together is, I think, a more interesting twist on the rom-com formula. Also Paul Rudd, a great watch as well. But I think this is a 7 for me.
That averages out to an 8.4, by the way.
That's a round down. Eight. I heard it.
Yeah, round down 8.
Round it to an 8.
I also, I liked how they touched upon the fact that he's always been a girlfriend guy.
Yeah.
Like, we know those people.
Yeah, you know those people. And I don't think it's not called out enough or acknowledged enough that those people are amongst us.
They're quick to fall in love.
All right. With that, we are going to hop to protagonist. So speaking of the girlfriend guy, what did you think of Peter? And maybe we'll throw in Sydney here.
Pistol Pete.
Got two protagonists.
Peter Klavan.
I can't give you Sydney because they actually do a really cool thing with Sydney towards the end of the movie. It's the start of the third act where that's when we learn the Sydney side of the story. How it takes about 45 minutes to work into the Sydney part of them becoming, or at least meeting, their meet cute over deli meats or whatever. It's a revelation, the aioli that he had. But I love how they go through their entire courtship, if you will, where they're listening to Rush, they go through the concert, and then they have to do the breakup to get into the third act of this thing. And then the camera finally shows us Sydney without Peter. And it's for the first time we realize that, oh, he's actually in a really, really similar position. And we finally get that understanding of it. So it's fully Peter here.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
But I just, okay. I absolutely love that entrance into the third act. I love it. Because that's when you get the sympathy for the other person. The empathy.
I do too.
Apathy.
I do too. I would posit that just because you don't see Sydney's side of it doesn't mean he's not a protagonist too. They just withhold his side, but he's still a protagonist. It's just like a different episode of Lost Season 2, where you get a different character's side, but they're all protagonists. We all want to know what's in that hatch.
If he's a protagonist, I'm taking 1 point away for never picking up his dog shit.
Yeah, that is
his compost. He's composting the sidewalk.
Except for that fucking bit, dude. I don't care. Like, pick up your fucking dog shit, bro.
Yeah.
Fuck is walking his dog wearing surf shorts and Uggs. Fuck out of here.
Yeah. These are kind of like just the ultimate dog shit detectives here, because they're running, they step in it, they turn around, they see one dog, and they go, oh, it's you! How would you know that? Are you looking at the butthole and going, looks like the circumference of that shit matches with that butthole perfectly. That must be the culprit.
They can all tell the freshness, shit. Yeah.
I am on the Malibu boardwalk, like, butthole detective.
Every time, like, people immediately step in his dog shit, like, it's always like a crowded area. Like, how do you not see that?
Delay.
I guess.
I don't care.
It's also always like on a fucking sidewalk. It's not like it's hidden in the grass.
You know, Dave, it's interesting that you said that about Sydney and the whole revelation in the beginning of the third act.
The aioli was a revelation.
What's that?
I fucking love that line. Oh.
Anyways, it's really weird. I didn't expect to, having not seen this in 16, 17 years, to actually find myself relating more to Sydney by the end of the movie and being like, oh, snap, that's me in my late 30s. Shit. Like, I did not see that coming, like that feeling that I had. So, yeah.
Oh, that's
cool. 100% right on Rush kicking all of the ass.
Absolutely.
Holy Trinity, yeah. Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shout out to Neil Peart.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
The Holy Trinity.
We'll get to them more later.
I love when they're jamming and they're doing the drum solo bit with their mouths. Great touch. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Great touch. I don't know. Like, I think score it whichever way you want. I would classify both as a protagonist, and I got to give them both 10, man. I think this nails them perfectly. They're both fun as hell to watch. Even on their own, they'd both get a 10. Paul Rudd is Paul Rudd. He's charming. He's affable. He's cute. He's amazing. Jason Segel is clumsy and still charming and brash and, yeah, all of those things. I think amazing. So, boom.
I would give them... Okay, so I would also kind of put them together, and I'm going to go with a 9 here. I think Peter's really annoying a lot of the time, but I think that's just the character, and what's a character without their flaws, right? I can't really dock that. That's how they were written, right? But I don't like Sydney's pushiness in a lot of situations. It's like kind of borderline... kind of like controlling-ish. A lot of times he gets over the phone, and it made me kind of uncomfortable. Mm. So 9.
I'm going to hop in if you don't mind, because I want to follow up on that comment, because I remember the first time watching this in theaters, I absolutely felt on edge the entire time about what Sydney was doing and why he was like being so cool with Paul Rudd, who is not being very cool at all. and was being very awkward and weird. And I was like, what's the ulterior motive here? What's going on? And then he asked for the money. I was like, all right, something's way up. And like my feelers were going off crazy. I don't get that as much anymore now that I've seen it. But now I kind of get where you're coming from 100% with that thought. But now I've kind of acquiesced to like, they are a good romance couple, if we'll call them that. And I honestly like what they do with Rashida Jones. She doesn't have as much to do, but I really like how they handled her character quite a bit.
She's very supportive.
Maybe unrealistically so.
Yeah.
Which is another thing altogether, but
it's in a movie.
The protagonists are the couple. The couple is Paul Rudd and Jason Segel, and I think they're both at like the top of their game here. I think they're both really sweet and earnest, and that kind of brash pushiness on Jason Segel's part, like, yeah, I feel it, but it also kind of brings out the best in Paul Rudd's character. Like, it's this weird dynamic that just works, and both characters make each other better, and that's what you want in your romance movies. And so, it's like
100%,
yeah,
I'm with Kyle. I think I've talked myself into a 10.
You know, there's a part with that brash and pushiness that you talking about this just made me think of, is when, you know, that reveal that he's desperate for that friendship. That's kind of, he's kind of lost due to like families and kids and stuff, and you hear him talking to one of his friends. He's like, Legoland again every weekend.
That's too much Legoland. Back to him,
and he goes, can I go with you, man? Can I come?
I like that part. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that unease that you have about his character and like the money and everything is by design, because
100%.
While this thing is doing a by the books rom-com, at the same time it's toying with the fact that, like, well, you don't really know what's happening, because there's not a whole lot of this kind of movie. The romantic comedy is not a huge genre, so we can play with things and make you think certain things, and like, so they give you this character that, like, you never see him working, and he has a suspicious job title, and then he's asking for money, and you're like, I don't know about this guy, and then like he does the cool thing and you're like, oh god, I knew I liked him the whole time. just typical of the genre of the rom-com, where it's like, see, he was a good guy, and they both brought each other out of their shells, and goddamn, I love this movie. I love it so much. And Peter Klavan is such a personable character, and you just want to root for him no matter what. And I think I read somewhere, I don't know what movie it was for, Jason Segel is the guy you cast when you want a despicable character that you still like, because he's such a likable guy. It might have been for Shrinking, actually. The reason they cast him in Shrinking is because, like, beginning of that show, he is not a likable dude. He does some
pretty design,
despicable
though.
Things.
Yeah.
But you still root for him because it's Jason Segel.
That's just a something totally about different that's... situation.
That's oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But, like,
folks, go watch Shrinking. It might be the best show on TV. It's he says, so knowing good. That Severance is back. Never mind. It's the second best show on TV.
We've been trying to convince Ryan to start Severance, so that's...
I really need to catch up on Severance.
Both on Apple.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have a login.
Binge all the Apple stuff, because it's all good.
It is all good.
Okay.
For All Mankind, easy. God damn it, I love that show.
Ted Lasso? Anyway, 10. 10 for character, for protagonist for me.
I'm going to bring it back down to earth. Because I do believe it is only one protagonist, because that's the way that the structure of this goes. That's the way the shape of this type of story goes. It's the one that pushes it along. We don't get the Sydney side for almost till the end of it. So that's why I don't think he's doing anything that physically push the story forward. It's Peter. He's got to find his groomsman. It's his story. Semantics. I'm going with a 7, because I think Peter's great. I think that he has flaws. I think he's Paul Rudding really, really hard sometimes. And I love it, but it gets a little grating also. You're just like, just too fucking nice. Just stop being so fucking nice.
Hey, some of us are just that nice, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't find an issue with that.
I just wanted to, like, it always felt like he was going to crack at some point, but then he puts on that smile, like, that seems genuine.
Oh,
it
no.
always seems real.
Yeah. Come on.
Maybe that says something about the cynical me, but the dog. I'm going to go 7.
All right, that averages out to a 9.
Nice.
Not too shabby dabby.
So this will be interesting because the next category is antagonist. And
it's Tevin.
Okay. He's probably the antagonist. Yes, there's not really another one. So Kevin.
Tevin.
One-third of Stella. Kevin. No. With the
one-third of Human Giant.
Tevin.
Yeah.
That's it. Uh-huh. Tevin. Tevin.
It's so douchey.
Even
it's
his so name douchey. Is antagonistic.
It's so
That's
douchey.
True.
And he's got the blonde highlights.
But what's Kyle, antagonizing?
Do you
want
to piss on a urinal cake?
Of his face? That's good marketing.
Yeah, but I agree with that. Antagonizing the B story of Lou That's Ferrigno's true. House.
Yeah.
But it's also part of Peter Klavan's arc of standing up for himself and being more confident because he yes. wants to inflict physical pain. And Tevin is part of that arc. So it is also part
That's a
of
fun
the
fun weave.
Arc.
That is a fun of a weave that they do there. I like that.
At a weird point, but justifiable.
It's not, even like his loneliness is the protagonist here because he's not, or the antagonist because he's not even lonely.
You're right. He's happy like in his life. Mm-hmm.
Social norms. Guy. That's the antagonist.
Is the antagonist. Society is the antagonist.
I'd argue it's Rashida Jones because she pushes him into this.
She can do no wrong.
She gets.
No. She can do no wrong.
It's not even really Rashida Jones that pushes it, though.
She's perfect.
So much as it's her friends that are like,
Jim was wrong
weird?
In the office. Jim was wrong.
That's fair.
She didn't do anything to deserve what she got in the office. Didn't do anything
Society.
To she was
Society
perfect.
And also Tevin.
Who was?
But yeah, I definitely say Tevin. And I love this guy. But you're right. I mean, he is sort of the B story antagonist. I don't know. Overall, I
Lou
give it,
Ferrigno.
I mean, he is partially one, but he comes back around too, and he's suddenly in the wedding party, which
you wouldn't like when I'm antagonizing.
Getting Great Lou Ferrigno get to be in your fucking wedding party. That'd be crazy.
I love when Lou Ferrigno says, did sleeper hold? And they demonstrates it, and he gives like a little wink. I love it. I love it so much.
I love that I watched the extended like director's cut version of this movie, and it still doesn't explain why the fuck Lou Ferrigno's in his wedding. Cool, you sold his house. Like,
is
why
that how it
your
works?
Wedding?
It's the billboards. The billboards convinced Lou Ferrigno that this guy's cool. And
he's
he
cool as hell.
That's what it was. Uh-huh.
Does Lou Ferrigno need friends? Is this a cry for help from Lou Ferrigno?
Well, we actually didn't get to the Maybe. Fifth act where we find out that Lou Ferrigno is also having the same issues as Sidney and Peter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the only reason
down,
he listed his house.
Yeah.
He listed his house
why he
to
left
make
statue
friends.
There.
To make friends. He wanted to move somewhere where he had better access to more people.
He doesn't want that plight to fall on deaf ears outside of his own.
I would absolutely keep the statue of Lou Ferrigno if I bought the house.
Oh, 100%. Oh,
I think anyone would. That's part of the charm.
I would dress it up.
Of course. Like, yeah, like your Stone Cold Steve Austin Santa Claus.
Santa Claus? Yeah, dude.
I was more thinking you were going to go like the giant skeletons that people still have in front of their house from Halloween that they just slapped a Christmas hat on. You're like,
listen,
I like
12 foot skeletons are year round decorations.
Respect.
I can
people
definitely.
Die all the time, guys.
Goddamn right they do.
But really tall people don't die as often as you think. So it is kind of.
That's why you have to keep leave them up as a monument.
I mean,
a reminder.
Medically, though,
mine's
actually.
Matumbo outside. I got him doing the finger wave and everything.
Yeah.
Not in my house.
Taller people die on average earlier. Just medical fact.
Yeah,
there's just
we've all seen my job.
That's where I got stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I'm going
Oxygen.
7. 7 on antagonist.
Okay. Perfect. Sean?
I'm going 1, and I feel like I'm being generous. Yeah. I don't feel like, if you've seen this movie, I don't feel like I need to defend that.
Fair.
I'm going 4.
All right. I completely understand. Dave, do you have...
5. I'm going right down the middle.
All right. I think I might be a 6, slightly more, only because there isn't really an antagonist, and I think that's fine. It works to the story's favor. And that's why I'm positive on it.
Wait, so, okay, question. If there
they were
is
smart
no antagonist,
to not have an antagonist.
Wait, six. So if there's no antagonist, it's a straight five. But if there's an antagonist who's bad, it's a zero. Is that the baseline here? No antagonist.
Why does that have to be a baseline?
You can.
Little man in your stomach, man. Just fire a number out.
Little man in stomach, yeah. That's what I did.
Oh, there's no logic here. If like five is like no antagonist and you're just good. Cool.
Well, then I'm also going to bend mine to a five.
Tevin's an antagonist, yeah, but that's why the fact that there's not like a big drama or hubbub with like the relationship shit that
fuck
they
that guy. I pissed on his face in a bet against
that. I think they deserve points. And whatever this is, if this is for, again, this is not the experience grind system of like story one or zero. If there is a story, it gets a one. It is more of this tangible. Did the antagonist do their job? And I think
I'm back down to it.
What
two.
Little antagonist there was. Perfect. There wasn't.
Back down to a two, you said?
Yeah.
All right. Somehow that averages out to a perfect five.
All right. Nice.
Whatever works.
All right. All right. Next up, screenplay. So this is going to be the sticky wicket. People, what did you think about the dialogue, kind of, and the script in this?
Loved it.
This is
fucking
this is
love it.
It's not natural, right. And that's what I love about it.
Love it. What? Well, that's interesting. What was it natural about it, Dave?
Standing up at the altar, doing bro puns
that's,
at
okay.
each other.
Okay.
Forever.
That's because
yes,
I was right. Like,
you just
like,
wait.
As soon as you said it's
wait.
Not natural, agreed. I was immediately thinking, like, I liked how natural it felt, but I totally agree.
Same.
That that bit, I can't give it a perfect, but I will give it, I'll give it an eight.
But
there is a little bit of like cringy over thing too. It's not, but I mean, fuck it. Yeah, I'll go eight.
But
the cringiness feels real.
It's
yeah.
The points that's not natural, and that's like the going over the top because it's a comedy, which I think actually lends itself to being a better screenplay because it's doing its job. I think that this is a straight 10 for me, if not a bonus point somewhere, and that it's still quotable to this day, and I didn't even realize it came from this movie. They, like, everything I mentioned Doug earlier, like, him just showing back up out of nowhere and, like, calling him a little filthy slut. Like, dude, popped me every time. I thought the screenplay for this was fantastic in the genre that it was in.
So, I agree, and also, you just explained what I explained for antagonists. I think a lot of this, if we're saying screenplay, maybe doesn't get to count because I think a lot of it was also improv too, but it's all part of it. Like, it still works in the favor of whatever. I think you're right. All of the dialogue still clicks. It's still fucking real quotable. It's still good. What was your score, Sean?
10.
Was it 10? Yeah, I'll echo it. 10.
I'm going to go with a 7 because this plays into the rom-com formula beautifully. It follows it to a T, which I think actually lets the improv flow even better because it's a formula.
Mm-hmm.
It's a formula that's been done a million times over. We all know how it goes. When you can do your improv within that formula and still hit all the beats that you're supposed to hit, I think it just absolutely works. You got the right performers. You got the right script. I'm giving it a 7. I think it's great.
I agree with what everybody else said. Just echoing endlessly quotable. I still quote this movie multiple times a week, I would say. I am always saying stuff from this movie, like Latris on the MJ and calling people Jobin. So for me, it is a 10.
All right.
Brosef Goebbels.
The most famous.
Brosef Goebbels did get me. It was out of nowhere. I cracked. I was like, all right.
Brosef
they
Goebbels.
Fucking were throwing that one around in the writer's room and were like, yep, that one.
That's the one.
Uh-huh. That averages out to a 9 for director. Sorry, for director. That averages out for. That averages out to a 9 for screenplay.
He wrote it. Still counts.
All right. That leads into then style and tone of the movie. The style and tone. anybody have strong thoughts? All right, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just go out again. We've called this a rom-com. If you're going on, like, it pretty much nails everything. Again, it's hard. It's crazy how well this is going to do. But again, I'm coming in full 10. It was a full-on rom-com, nailed every single aspect of it perfectly, and just had a fun flip of making it two dudes being friends instead of two people trying to bang. So, 10.
Which they might do still. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know that they're not going to bang.
He won't stop a man from kissing him, so.
Yeah.
Very progressive.
Full tongue.
So and smoked. That's okay.
Anybody else want to hop in?
You know, I don't have a strong thought on it. It's a bromance. It's a romantic movie. It's really brightly lit. It follows the formula again. Yeah. It's a good looking flick. We're gonna get to director, I think, later, and I mean that's fine. Also, there's no real surprises here, and there's nothing wrong with
yeah.
that. It feels good. Yeah. I'm gonna go 7 again.
Yeah,
I'll go eight. From locations to you know, the tone of this movie, like I really can't add much else onto this. Nothing blow you away, but it's also perfectly serviceable. If not a little bit more, just due to all of the different places that you go. So 8.
Thanks, Dr. Seuss.
And thank you.
I'm going to go ahead and give it a 7 for all the same reasons.
Same. I'm going to be a 7 as well, but I really like what Dave said and want to echo just like the brightly litness of it.
That's
felt
just
like
an easy
look
comedy
and
trick.
Style and tone.
That's all it is.
It felt like every single aughts comedy of the day. Like there's nothing visually interesting about this movie at all. Not a single thing.
Nope. So it's such an easy move to do in comedies, though. That's why they do the super bright lights, because it just makes it easier to light, so you can have two cameras on at once. That's it.
Or three, whatever you need. It's edited well. The improv moves it along nicely, so like you don't notice it. But like this is shot like a TV show. There's nothing special here. I'm gonna go to a 6. Actually, I'm gonna take it down.
Disappointed yourself.
Punished.
I talked myself down.
That is going to average out to an 8 at the end of the day, though.
Okay.
On the strength of that Kyle 10.
Right. So the next category is going to be music, and this is going to be an interesting one. I've been waiting for this category.
It's not a hard one, Ryan. It's not a hard one. This is Rush. This is a Rush movie, goddammit. And I'm going with an 11.
Ooh, damn!
I love it.
I'm going to usurp Dave only to say I'm giving it a 21-12, but in the middle of that is an 11. So, come on, baby.
Well done. Does anybody dissent? Does anybody think this is not an 11?
Who doesn't like Rush? Raise your hand right now. Do it. Raise your hand right now, you coward. It's the Holy Trinity.
Hey, don't be bullied into a scoring system, Sean.
All right. So, is everybody else doing 11s?
10. I was only going to go 10. But
okay. Do you want to talk about why then? Either one of you, sirs.
Because I don't want to blow a 11 load on this music.
It's good, but they're not Rush fanboys, which is fair. But
I love Rush. I do. Yeah, and I think if you're going to have a band in a movie that both people are fans of and then feature the actual band in the movie, that is fantastic. It's a great trick. But the rest of the music in this movie is fine.
The only music I remember in this movie is the 19 times they played Tom Sawyer.
Tom Sawyer.
So
I thought that
which
was
is why for me it's only little. Perfect, not it's better than perfect.
Yes. All right, Brian, that's exactly what I wanted. That's how I felt exactly, especially in the first I would say, act or two acts of this movie, there's a lot of generic of the time music.
Yeah, because you got Rush coming up.
I did want to shout out at the end, the wedding band is OK Go. Sure. And so that's really cool. So I'm at 10.
But they didn't do anything cool like be on an airplane or do some sort of Rube Goldberg. Or they just wore a wedding band. What's the point?
Actually, sadly not.
What's the point?
Scrolling through the soundtrack on this, there is so many goddamn songs on the soundtrack, and only like 7 of them are 2 songs by Rush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and like the other 17, I don't remember.
This is actually crazy. Shit. If you haven't calculated score, I'm gonna go down to an 8 because like if we were truly doing something with music, the music would show an evolution as Peter as a character, and we would get more rock tracks throughout. But outside of the Rush, you're right. It is all that generic of the times music. There is no journey. There is no nothing. It is just what they could afford of the time good. And then Rush was here.
Let's say, story-wise, that Peter could not embrace his love of Rush because Zoe didn't even know Rush. But once he meets Sydney, he's able to finally live his true self and enjoy Rush for the rest of the movie.
I'll just back up my perfect 11 because of the scene where he's trying to demonstrate how awesome they are by playing it for her on a laptop speaker.
Oh, God.
And I've been in that same position so many times.
Yes.
When you have something that is so impactful to you and you're looking at the face of the other person and
it's so much better on big speakers.
Yeah. Mm. No, it's so much better when the face you're looking at is Rashida Jones.
I mean that too, but
doesn't matter.
That's
a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
That averages out to a 10.
See, my embarrassment of playing something on a laptop is instantly wiped out when I look up and see Rashida Jones there. I'll be totally fine either way.
Dave, put down the airbase.
All right. With that, we're going to hop to a new category this week. This is going to be genre. So you're going to rank the movie within its genre. How well does this work as a comedy? Does it
comedy
push
subgenre.
The needle forward? Is it really good? Is it not a good comedy? What are your thoughts?
Right, if you're going straight comedy, I give it a 7/10. If we go rom-com, I give it 10/10.
I guess it could be both.
That's a good breakdown.
So, what is genre?
Well, rom-com
is it.
Yeah, I mean that too.
Here we go.
Like, where are we breaking the dividing line? All of that.
Because genre is a fascinating rom-com thing to talk about, and this is really exciting.
But I would classify this myself as more of the rom-com. It is absolutely a rom-com. We've said it all night, and I think it does nail that aesthetic perfectly. So I have to give it a 10 for that.
Yeah, I'll concede. I misspoke. This is absolutely a rom-com more than a comedy.
Mm-hmm. Can you really give a 10 without John Cusack or Kate Beckinsale?
Yes, you can.
I'm sure you could.
When Harry Met Sally is just right there. When Harry Met Sally is right there.
I think what you just said actually might get a 9 out of me.
Careful there. Because if I compare this to When Harry Met Sally, I want to readjust
that's a 10
every
or
11.
That's
true.
I mean,
that's true.
That is an 11 for rom-com. I mean, that's what you're comparing this to, right? To the top of the genre.
That's a rom-com, but no, what I'm comparing it to is what genre is an expectation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the expectation here that you're going to see is comedy, but comedy in itself is not a genre. The genre would be romance and then romantic comedy underneath that. There's an entire theory about this that a professor out of Ohio did named Eric Williams, how he listed... basically came up with there's only 11 genres and they're called super genres. You have action, crime, fantasy, horror, life, romance, sci-fi, sports, thriller, war, and western. And then underneath that, there's around 50 macro genres, but then there's another like 199 micro genres that. And you can kind of create what a movie is based out of those kind of names and stuff. It's a really, really fascinating study. If you want to go look into it.
Yes.
It's amazing.
I would like links for this at some point, please.
So that's why, if we're going to go off of that, to me, this is a romance. It's a romantic comedy, but it's also a buddy film in a lot of ways. But it could also be determined as a coming of age movie if you really want to even dive deeper than that. I think this thing hits the expectation of a romantic comedy to a T. It is note by note what it's supposed to be. I think this is a 10. They absolutely nail it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
I'm going to echo what everybody else is saying. The whole genre of romantic comedy is like a comfort genre. You want something familiar. You want to put on that comfy sweater and just kind of watch the movie. You're not there for sudden unexpectations. Unexpectations? Is that a thing? It is now. And this movie.
Just do what Kyle did and said, I Googled this and never heard of it. And then you're covered.
Unexpectations. We all have them.
It turns out it's a gas company.
That's why they're unexpectations. It's a full 10 for me. This movie hits all the beats. It's so good. And obviously, since we all said 10, that is a unanimous 10 for genre.
All right. With that, we're going to hop to entertainment value, another new category. This is just how entertaining was your experience? Were you engaged with it?
Fully passed the phone test. I didn't reach for it once. 10.
I think the phone test is a great way of measuring this.
The phone test is good. So is the watch test.
Yeah. Yeah. Did not have to look at absolutely anything. It had my attention the full time.
What was the length on this bad boy?
1 hour 44.
That's a very personal question, Sean.
I'm going to go a 9 because I was watching this on the 2-monitor setup and I was looking at IMDb for the movie while I watched it to a degree. So I'll give it a 9, but it was great.
I thought that what you were going to say was going to be weirder. I was going to say like something like I was watching on the 2-monitor system and I had it right in the middle. There's just a line going down the entire time.
Watching on his phone.
I had IMDb on the far left and Wikipedia on the far right.
I had I Love You Man on the left screen. I had I Love You Man, the porn parody on the right screen. Just trying to see how they line up.
It's kind of like a Wizard of Oz Pink Floyd situation. Third act got a little weird.
Those Doug scenes, though. Hot.
Sean, what were your thoughts? 10.
At an hour 44, I wouldn't have been able to guess that this was an hour and 44. It flew by. I was thoroughly entertained in all of the bits and the bobs. That's a 10.
Yeah, the intro was a little slow for me, but at no point was my attention diverted. So it's a 10.
Okay. That's an easy 10, I think, then, right?
Yeah.
I like when math's right. easy, because math's hard.
It can be.
Yeah. It's nice when it works that way.
That's right, why they put final... it on your phones now.
There you go. You don't even have to do it. The final category is going to be direction. All right, so this is the all-encompassing talk about the director. Talk about, usually a director gets lumped with the overall kind of vision of the film. So just overall, how it came together. What are your thoughts?
John Hamburg.
Written and directed and produced by.
Famously.
Hyphened hard.
Along Came Polly, which is a movie that I thought was a lot older than it actually was.
I saw the same. I was like, oh, he did that too?
Yeah.
And Little Fockers.
He produced Little Fockers.
He produced that one, but he only directed Along Came Polly. He stayed in his lane. This movie, Why Him and Me Time.
I will say when his name popped up at the end credits, I was a little surprised because I didn't do any research going into this. And I was like, who's that guy?
It feels like an Apatow movie.
Yes, dude. I was expecting to see Judd Apatow.
And in 2009, that is very much a compliment.
Yeah. As somebody who even loves Apatow movies, I don't think this feels like an Apatow movie because it's paced very well. There is not a 15-20 minute slump in like the third act like every Apatow movie. And I love Apatow movies.
Yeah.
But this is paced so much nicer than an Apatow movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Has the feel.
Along Came Polly famously is the second only movie I've ever walked out of, but not because it was bad.
go
Care
on.
To explain?
Go on now. That's you can't leave us hanging there.
I think I've told it before, but me and a buddy were flirting with two girls on the highway in a car next to us, and we exchanged numbers. And I went to meet him
in the car. You
via hand signals?
No, we wrote it on a piece of paper, and this was in the early days of cell phone. They called us. We set it up. My buddy couldn't go. I was like, "Fuck it, I'll go meet these two girls." Yeah, right. I show up there. It's Dietrich two Pentecostal Bader. Girls who have gone with their entire Pentecostal church youth group to see the movie and invited me. And so halfway through the movie, convert. I was like, "Man, fuck this!" And I just got up and was like, "I gotta go," and I left. And I drove home.
That was way less cool than I thought it was.
Yeah, it wasn't because the movie was bad. And I watched it later. I enjoy it.
In all fairness, Andy Samberg in this movie, he was up for the challenge that you weren't up to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
That's very true.
Yeah. He got Alan.
I also like Thomas Lennon looking him up at the end when he's in his Andy Samberg's in his suit.
So good.
Just the little touches.
And Andy Samberg's like, no.
I think, again, we've talked all night. With everything else, I have to give it a 10. He nailed rom-com and the look and the feel and everything perfectly. So
I'm going to go with a 7 again. There's not a whole lot special here. And that's not a bad thing. It's a really good movie. It's really entertaining. He did what he had to do. And
yeah.
Really I like it, damn it.
I think he benefits a lot from the cast here and how...
Yeah.
Cohesive they are as a unit and how well they improv off of each other. I think that has a lot to say for how this ended up in the end, and I'm gonna give it an 8.
Sean?
9. The little man told me.
I think I might be a 7 right there with Dave. I agree. I don't think the direction was anything special, particularly. I think he was competent enough to know to get out of the way of the improv and let that do what it needs to, and then edited it down really perfectly.
Yeah.
But there's nothing here that would make me go, I can't wait to see John Hamburg's next movie. And in fact, we talked about what he did, and I actually don't like his other movies too much, to be honest. So
that one with James Franco really sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why him?
The
Why
little
him
guy in my stomach told me to Brian change Grant it to an 8.
Ooh. Change it to an 8. That ain't great.
That might change things here. It doesn't. we averaged an 8 for impact on the industry.
Perfect.
Sorry, what I'm still using, I'm still using old notes. 8 for direction. Okay.
All right, so let me do the calculator.
Impact
here.
On the industry. Could you imagine if this was an 8 on impact on the industry?
No, because I have to remind myself that this came out.
It was one of those about 10 minutes into this movie. I was like, I've seen this, right? And then when he introduces him to his jerk off cave, I was like, I've seen this.
All right, so all together, that looks like our score is going to average out to an 87 out of 100, which is kind of on the high end. I'm surprised, but I guess I'm not after hearing all the tins that were thrown at this thing as we were talking about it. But
because shit's been so heavy the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad we had something light to talk about that people enjoyed. That's
this is not my nightmare.
That is something that screams of it's mildly sexist, and I'm kind of on the edge of he just does not like sports with women, and that's it, and that's the joke. And then it turns out it's true because women injure him on the field.
It's his nightmare.
Maybe this is just a reoccurring thing for him. Yeah,
it could. If that's the case, then I get it.
We're still waiting on Act 4, and that's the flashback act.
Waiting on I Still Love You, Man.
I still love you.
Would you guys see it?
I mean, yeah.
Absolutely. In a second, I would go watch that movie.
Nice.
Yeah, 100%.
I think that's a good gauge of how you enjoyed a movie, is if
Would you see the
16
sequel?
Years from now, if they randomly came out with a sequel, would you go see it?
If they waited 16 years from now, Paul Rudd would look the same.
Paul Rudd would look the same. Man does not age.
Oh, man. Jason Segel would look like Mel.
All right. Well, I'm glad you all enjoyed the movie. With that, I'm going to throw it to Kyle, and let's find out what we're going to do next week.
Man, I've been trying to have the little man in the stomach decide for me. I'm torn between four fucking movies. It's awful because now that there's more people in the rotation, you don't get to pick as often, and like you want it. I also pick shit a lot.
What's the little man telling you? And also, I can't tell you how happy I am that this Double Indemnity bit is stuck around.
It works, man. It's a perfect analogy. Ah, fuck. I had one I literally just added to the list, like...
Why?
Earlier ago. I don't know. I thought of it.
I thought you were going to say 10 minutes ago.
It was like 30 minutes ago.
Them out? Or do you want to keep them a surprise? I kind of want to...
All right, let me give you the genre, and then you pick what you want.
Oh, okay. Choose your own adventure.
We have fantasy. We have coming of age. We have comedy. Okay. We have sports comedy.
Ooh.
B or D for me. Coming of age or sports comedy.
I'm basically anything but A.
So, okay.
Yeah, coming of age or sports comedy.
Okay. We're doing sports comedy. little cheerleading flick starring the fantastic Kirsten Dunst. A little flick called Bring It On.
Ooh,
I have never seen any.
You've
of
never
these.
Seen Bring It On.
Never seen it either.
Bring It On.
It's cold in here.
There must be some Toros in that atmosphere, baby. All right, I'm excited that neither of you have seen it. I thought you had. I'll just tell the story real quick. I saw this as a joke. It was playing at the theater I worked at, and I took a buddy so we could make fun of it. Turned out to be one of the better movies I'd ever seen. Completely turned me around. Excited for you guys to watch that. So,
I'm excited now, too.
I don't know why you thought that I would have ever have seen this movie.
I don't know. I just assumed. Dave, have you ever seen Bring It On?
I don't think I have.
Wow.
No, but I'm happy you had your barbecue sauce moment
I absolutely
in that
have.
Theater.
Yeah.
You had what? Yeah. Oh.
Wow.
So there we go.
I look forward to this.
Bring It On is also the one I just added to the list like 30 minutes ago. So
that's a little man
love how
pick.
That works.
That's what that is. Well
that's
done.
That's
okay.
Nice.
That's just feeling it.
I'm glad everything worked in its favor. I honestly, it would have been really funny if everybody just went coming of age and you're like, fuck it. I'm doing Bring It On.
I'm doing the sports comedy.
I'm doing the other one.
It brought me of age.
Do you want to know what the coming of age movie was?
Yeah,
sure.
It was Moonrise Kingdom.
Oh, I would have.
That's
loved
a fun one.
That too.
I love. That's my favorite Wes Anderson. So it will come in rotation at some point.
I've only seen one Wes Anderson movie.
Which one?
Rushmore.
Wow!
Oh my God, Brian!
That's a good one, though.
I'd love to watch all of them with you.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we'll get to Moonrise
Kingdom. I have a weird
Kingdom
relationship with Wes Anderson.
Soon. You have a weird relationship with him?
Yeah,
you.
Yeah. I think he's an absolute genius sometimes.
You'll
yeah.
love Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yes, you will.
Oh, I've tried to watch that and I couldn't get through it, so we'll see.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, hey, Brian, Wes Anderson may not be for you.
It's true. He might not be.
Oh, no.
Just say, Sean, take us out.
Huh.
Well, guys, I absolutely look forward to next week. I look forward to checking out this movie that I have never seen before, but I've heard so much about. And folks, I appreciate you listening this far. And if you've listened this far and you enjoy what you hear and you want to hear more, head on over to our Patreon, patreon.com/experiencegrind, where we put out a bonus episode every asterisk Friday, mm-hmm. most of the time. That's the asterisk. But for as little as a dollar each month, you can hear a whole bunch of bonus content where we just kind of tangent talk and ask each other weird-ass questions or something. I don't know. It's good stuff, though. And you're good stuff. Thank you. Discord link in the show notes below. Ryan, it's on you to take us out, buddy.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Thank you all for joining us or joining me in rewatching this movie. I greatly appreciate that. And I appreciate you listeners for your time every single week. Go and just have the best of times yourself.